I'm Lisa Prather, and welcome to The Voice of Health with our host, Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, where lives are changed every day through the natural approach to healthcare. Today is part two of a two-part series called Opiate-Free Pain Relief, A New Hope. And Dr. Prather, we just had so much material to go over. We've decided to extend it to part two. And also, September is National Drug-Free Pain Management Awareness Month. And this all stemmed from hearing a radio show on WIBC a couple weeks ago. And you felt it was a good show, but there were some aspects of it you wanted to add to. Yeah,
to clarify and kind of go into a little bit deeper.
Yeah. And we talked last week, and if you're listening, we would encourage you to listen to part one, mm-hmm. as we talked about safe, effective, non-addictive strategies to manage chronic pain and new innovative treatment for opiate use disorder. And we covered those last week. It was very informative. So this week, we're going to talk about two areas, the educating public and professionals on proper use of opiates and pharmaceutical culpability in creating this crisis. So, first of all, how did we get to this crisis?
Well, interestingly enough, in the 60s and 70s, they were studying pain, and in the early 80s, there were the first pain management hospitals that were going on. There was actually some very excellent people who were innovators on that, who had gone through pain themselves and also their family members, and had started some pain clinics. And the pain clinics were basically along the lines of what's recommended. You know, more physical medicine, cognitive behavioral therapy, diet.
What should be recommended.
Right, mm-hmm. Those types of things. The problem was is that the insurance companies really balked at that, because it's a labor-intensive type of thing. You have to spend a lot of time with a patient. You need to have a lot of counseling. Quite frankly, the insurance companies said, no, we're not paying for it. Mm-hmm. And the doctors were, during that time, doctors were limited to less and less amount of time to see the patient. And pain is a very complicated type of a process. And you need to spend time with the patient. You need to have a whole system to really make that work. And our society just wasn't really supporting the type of care that needed to be done, the type of care that we found that we should have been doing in the first place for pain, mm-hmm. Wasn't being paid for, because we had become an insurance-based type of healthcare system. And so doctors were being bombarded. You know, they had a certain amount of time that they needed to see patients, and without the ability to provide the care that was necessary. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of a tsunami waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm. Tsunami has happened.
And then the Purdue Pharma came up with a time-released opiate, OxyContin. And it kind of hit just at the right time. And there had been some research. There were some people who were very very passionate and really believed that they had found the answer to the pain crisis. Just be able to write a script and you could solve people's pain. And the very faulty research that they were citing was that they were finding that only 1% of all prescription opiate users wound up being addicted. And they said it's just a 1% type of a problem. So, you know, why should you make people suffer just on the basis of a very small percentage of people who would become addicted to the opiates? The gentleman who actually wrote the article, I'd heard a podcast from him apologizing, because he said it was very poorly done.
The research?
Yeah, and mm-hmm. he didn't really expect it to take off like it did. But Purdue Pharma had taken that and then had touted that as a fact. And there were a huge amount, probably more researchers, more people who were saying, no, we know that opiates are addictive, mm-hmm. and if you start handing them out like that, we're going to have a crisis on our hands. However, they could write their articles and all those and say what they were saying, but they didn't have millions of dollars behind them promoting what they said. Whereas you had just a few researchers who I believe were genuinely motivated, mm-hmm. but had very poor information. In other words, they were not really understanding what kind of a crisis that they were going to be creating by promoting these opiates on a regular basis. So with the millions of dollars that Purdue put out to promote it, the amount of pharmaceuticals that were put out in opiates just increased just by exponentially.
And let's talk about the crisis. We have 115 deaths per day mm-hmm. in the United States from opiate overdose. 115 deaths per day.
Yeah. We have 2 million people addicted to prescription opiates and about 550,000 addicted to heroin in the United States right now. Due to the actions of our healthcare system, and you know it was something that the vast majority of researchers were saying no, this is a really bad idea, but because of money, and one of the interesting things is the person who was in charge of approving OxyContin in the way that it was approved, actually became a millionaire working for Purdue Pharma. Mm. Now, you know, I don't think that was, you start to sit there and say, you know, what was the money that was involved in this? You know, if you know that you've got a drug and you're working for the FDA, and you know that if you get it approved, that you're going to become an instant millionaire because once you leave the FDA, the company's going to give you a cushy job. How should that be done? You know, mm-hmm. What kind of a conflict is going on here? The FDA, with all the research that was out there, never should have believed the drug promotions. Mm-hmm. You know, or the faulty research that was being done to show that this was not an addictive. We know that it was completely false. The majority of the researchers said that it was faulty research and that it shouldn't have been promoted. But if if you have a chance of becoming a millionaire, well, you know, that shouldn't be. You're talking about people's lives here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I talked to the doctors, when I first came out of chiropractic school, the physicians were very, very cautious on giving opiates because they knew of the addictive qualities that were involved in that. And it took a lot of convincing for the medical professionals. But one of the things, a lot of the doctors, the primary care doctors, were the main ones that they were going after. That's where the people who were prescribing the opiates, not pain specialists. And again, we're very big that really specialists should be the ones who are giving out pharmaceuticals, not as much primary care physicians. Mm-hmm. So the primary care physicians weren't trained in pain medicine, so they really didn't know the effects that they were having. And many of the doctors were having three reps coming by a day.
Three
reps coming by a day. They offered them all sorts of incentives, including trips.
Mm-hmm. I remember that time.
All those different types of things. There was a huge amount of misinformation that was given. There was a lot of incentives involved in there. They said that the representatives for OxyContin, for the Purdue Pharma, were making on bonuses, just on bonuses, $100,000 a quarter. So you're talking about bonuses, just bonuses. Mm-hmm. As a pharmaceutical rep, you could make $400,000 just in bonuses a year by selling that. And so there was a lot of very aggressive marketing that was taking place. And, you know, the doctors at that time, their time was being squeezed. Mm-hmm. And how do you end a visit? Well, you write a script. So the patients that took up the most amount of time were the most difficult to deal with was the pain patients. Because they wanted an answer. They didn't want to be in pain. And they didn't have another answer. So what do? You write a script and you hand it out.
So were our, you know, pharmaceutical companies responsible for this crisis?
That is a very good question. And quite frankly, the courts are looking to decide that. Mm-hmm. There are many different types of lawsuits that are going on against Purdue Pharma. Matter of fact, Jeff Sessions came out just recently and said, you know what, we need criminal investigation into this. And he says, I think that there needs to be some prosecution that takes place.
Wow. Well, we come back more on part two of Opiate-Free Pain Relief, A New Hope.
You can win a free 60-minute massage in a relaxing spa at the Prather Practice. Each month, we have a drawing to give away a free massage to one of our lucky Facebook and Twitter fans. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. This is The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. The Voice of Health Wellness Tip with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice.
Well, I'm joined today with Lisa Kelly, CEO of Lupus Foundation of America, Indiana Chapter, and Carla Day, Board Chair. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're really glad to be a part of your organization. The Prather Practice is one of your many sponsors for the event coming up this Saturday, which we're going to talk about. But before we do, Lisa, let's start with you. What is lupus?
Lupus is a chronic autoimmune disease that can damage any part of the body, skin, joints, or organs. And with lupus, you're autoimmune, which means your immune system cannot tell the difference between foreign invaders and your body's healthy tissue. So as a result, it creates autoantibodies that attack and destroy its own healthy tissue.
Mm. So who gets lupus?
Lupus strikes mostly women. However, men and children can have lupus. It attacks women between the ages of 15 and 44. Women of color are at a higher risk of having lupus, Asian, Indian, African American, also greater, more than the Caucasian. People of all races and ethnic groups can have lupus, and approximately about 16,000 new cases of lupus are reported annually across the country, and currently there are more than 36,000 Hoosiers living with lupus.
Wow. So what are some of the symptoms of lupus?
Some of the symptoms could range from mild to severe. Mm-hmm. Extreme fatigue, hair loss, joint pain, swelling. One of the most common is also the butterfly rash that we get. There are some hair loss, but those are just some of the symptoms. There are various symptoms that lupus could have mm-hmm. an impact on.
Okay. How is lupus diagnosed?
So this is one of the more challenging things that we face with lupus, in that sometimes on average it takes up to 7 years for diagnosis.
7 years.
And up to two or three different doctors, because there's not one test that does this. A lot of times it's a battery of tests, and these would include blood tests as well as urine tests and biopsies, but mostly blood tests. And it's like if you have 7 or 8 out of 10 markers, then they'll say, you know, you're positive for lupus, but you can also have a false positive. So it's very confusing. Diagnosis is not simple.
Yeah, you said, I mean, it could be up to 7 years.
Right.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about the Lupus Foundation of America, the Indiana chapter, and the work that your organization does.
Absolutely. So our Indiana chapter is one of 15 chapters across the country. Our national office is in D.C. And so locally, we work on providing patient and public education and provide patient and caregiver services, which include we have a new Tranquil Tuesday series. So the second Tuesday of each month is yoga. The third Tuesday is meditation. And the fourth Tuesday is Tai Chi. And that's all free for lupus patients and up to one caregiver or friend to attend with them. And then we also have monthly support groups around the state. So Indianapolis, we have an east side, a west side, a Carmel, and then again, there are several others across the state.
So if someone's interested in finding out more about those groups or the support group, they need to go to, is it lupusindiana.org?
That is the website, yes. Or they could call 317-225-4400.
A special message from the DTS Weight Loss Center at the Prather Practice.
Are you tired of making the same weight loss resolution only to end up right back where you started? Let the professionals at DTS Weight Loss Center take all the frustration out of dieting. Our nutritionists and wellness coaches know what works for every body type and can develop a plan specific to your needs throughout your medically supervised program. Make the change by visiting us online at DTSweightLossCenter.com. Dedicate. Transform. Succeed.
When you call the Prather Practice to schedule your appointment at our DTS Weight Loss Center, mention the Voice of Health radio show and you'll receive a free initial consultation plus a free body composition analysis. 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. The DTS Weight Loss Center at the Prather Practice. Dedicate, transform, succeed.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, the most comprehensive wellness center in the Midwest.
Talking today on part two of a two-part series, Opiate-Free Pain Relief, A New Hope. And Dr. Prather, we want to talk about opiates and chronic pain. But before we go there, I want some clarification from last week. You talked about that the United States has the number one disease care in the world, but we're ranked 65th in total health care. Explain that a little bit more.
Well, the healthcare system to be operating correctly is should be about 20% disease care and about 80% structure function care. Mm-hmm. And in the rest of the world, structure function care is something that's integrated into the system. So if you go to France, 40% of all French prescriptions are homeopathic.
How much?
40%. So if you go in there and you have some type of injury, you're going to be prescribed homeopathic arnica. You're going to, for your sinus problems, you're going to be recommended to take colibercomicum. You know, you're not going to, if your child has a earache, they're not going to prescribe antibiotics. They think that's crazy. So they prescribe a combination of aconite, belladonna, and chamomile, ABC formula.
Which we carry at the office.
For the ear problems. So in France, 40% of all prescriptions are homeopathic. And then there's a very high regard for herbals, massage therapists. You know, you go into your doctor and you have a problem. They're going to say, one of the common things is go to a chiropractor, which they have there, or also go to a massage therapist. Those are the normal types of things. They don't write prescriptions for opiates. Mm-hmm. You know, a doctor wouldn't do that. So, you know, when you start to integrate the homeopathics into the system, India, you know, homeopathics are something like 60% of all prescriptions. And again, herbals are very big. So, you know, the problem is that, yes, we have amazing disease care and we spend billions of dollars on it, but it's not producing the healthcare benefits. there isn't anyone in the entire United States healthcare industry that doesn't say that there's a healthcare crisis in the United States. Mm-hmm. That is a given. Now, what they're doing is saying, well, I don't get it. We got the number one disease care in the world. We spend more money on healthcare than anybody else. We're concentrating, well, how can we improve our disease care model to provide the healthcare system that we need to be able to get better results? And the point is you've got to get the structure function care into it. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the structure function care, you're missing 80% of your success.
And you're only, amen to that.
And you're only getting 20% of the success. Mm-hmm. And even then, you're creating a lot more problems because you're expecting disease care, pharmaceuticals, to do things that they weren't intended to do. You know, we can't ask them to... You know, this would be like going out there and having a football game, and all you're doing is playing offense and you don't play any defense and expect to win the game. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get beaten every single time. So
defense wins the game.
There you go, see? 80% of the game is the structure function. So how do we fix the healthcare crisis? How do we improve the outcomes that we need? And that's by encouraging structure function care. You know, it makes logical sense. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're getting beat up. And we really do have the number one disease care system in the entire world.
But not total health care.
But not total,
65.
Not total health care. Wow. And the structure function ideas, the principles on that are just poo-pooed and have been poo-pooed for a long time within the medical system.
Is that
system.
A bad word?
That, well, you know, I don't want to say the real words
on
that.
It's your bad
word. Yeah. And, you know, that's what needs to be changed. Mm-hmm. And we need to change the attitude. Even then, you know, it's 50. We were talking about 50% of the people have never been to a chiropractor, but they have already an opinion on it. Mm-hmm. How do they have that? Well, that was promoted by the American Medical Association. The American Medical Association spent millions of dollars per year to discredit chiropractic. They've also spent it on acupuncture, herbals, and all those other different types of things. I know one of the things I have to do is whenever I have an MD or a nurse practitioner in my office is I have to re-educate them. Mm-hmm. Because they have been taught to think in a certain type of way. Ooh, an herbal, that sounds dangerous. Uh-huh. You know, I had a patient who was a medical doctor. And their potassium was high and their sodiums were low. And I said, well, that's easy to fix. You know, we just need to, you know, have you take some licorice. And they said, oh, you know, and I said, you know, can you get that on your own or do you want us to provide it? And they said, you know, and then I came back and I said, well, your numbers aren't better. You know, how much licorice did you take? And they said, well, I didn't take any because I wanted to do more research about the safety and the efficacy of that. And is that, would that be something that, you know, I really should do? You know, it's an herbal and, you know, that's kind of dangerous. I said, they use licorice and candy for kids. Uh-huh. And they go, oh, I hadn't really thought about that.
That's where my mind went right away.
Right. And they said, oh, I get it. Uh-huh. And I said, try the licorice. And their energy popped up. They were, you know, they were going through residency. Their ability to think increased quite dramatically. They felt so much better. Uh-huh. And, you know, we laughed about it. And I said, where did you get the idea that, you know, licorice was a problem? I mean, that's what licorice was used for. I said, oh, they just drill it into our heads. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, herbals, you know, they're dangerous. Do you know, I said, okay, I've got the FDA numbers and the Center of Disease Control numbers on deaths, okay? How many deaths from herbals have they accounted here for, you know, that came from that? Four. Mm-hmm. Okay, very thoroughly, and they really hate herbals. They've only found four people who died from, and, you know, they were just crazy on what they were taking.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, do you know the research on the number of people who die from pharmaceuticals every single year? I said, well, no. I said, okay, the number that I believe, you know, and these are properly prescribed. These aren't like opiate abusers,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we're getting those. These are properly prescribed pharmaceuticals. The number that the researchers that I accept is 250,000 a year.
Mm.
The ones that is the lowest one, more American Medical Association funded by the pharmaceuticals, is 125,000.
Mm-hmm.
Four versus, okay, let's take the smaller number, 125,000.
Uh-huh.
Which one is more dangerous?
Mm-hmm.
Pharmaceuticals are absolutely great. I use properly.
Use
but you
properly.
Have to understand, mm-hmm. they're dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
They're dangerous. And homeopathics, in all the hundreds of years that they've been followed, no one's ever died from a homeopathic. No one ever, 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 ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the FDA admits that. No one's ever died from a homeopathic.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, no one's ever even been harmed from a homeopathic.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. We come back more on part two of Opiate-Free Pain Relief, A New Hope.
Listen to the Voice of Health Radio on your smartphone or tablet on all of the top radio apps available. TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. You can find these apps and more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. This is the Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather.
Laughter is the best medicine.
I went to one nutritionist that was just all raw food. She said, first of all, I want you to juice. I said, okay, juice is not a verb. I don't know what you're talking about. She said, no, for the first month, I want you to cleanse your system. So I want you to drink just juice. I didn't do well with that. She sold me a juicer. Third day, I juiced a ham. She called me up. How you doing? I'm juicing. Let me get this Krispy Kreme in here. We'll be good to go. If you're drinking ham juice and your arm goes numb, wait an hour. I'm not a nutritionist, but that's just how I think you should do it.
Have you ever been curious about how acupuncture can benefit your health? The Prather Practice has received the NDA List Award for Best in Acupuncture for 2 years in a row, and we've been rated the top acupuncture provider by Google+. Dr. Robert Prather is a board-certified licensed acupuncturist. He's earned a reputation for combining effective acupuncture-based techniques with cutting-edge technology to help patients with many conditions. Acupuncture is documented and proven to help with many health issues, including pain, allergies, addiction control, anxiety, fatigue, vision problems, infertility, and so much more. We even have needle-free options for those who are a bit squeamish around needles. Call the Prather Practice to schedule your appointment and experience the benefits of acupuncture for yourself. 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Or learn more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. The Prather Practice, restoring hope. I'm Lisa Prather, and you're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of The Prather Practice, where we get to the root cause of your health issue.
We're talking today about part two of a two-part series, Opiate-Free Pain Relief, A New Hope. And Dr. Prather, let's talk about opiates and chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you go ahead with this because you know, people think opiates help with chronic pain, but do they?
No, they don't. One of the things is that I heard one gentleman who was speaking about the opiate. He was actually on the radio on WIBC.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, well, just try to take people's pain medication away from them and see how well that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and of course, you know, that is one thing that is very, very true. But it is important for, you know, physicians, researchers, and the public to know that chronic pain is increased, and I repeat that again, increased by opiates. Not decreased. Now, what is the proper use of opiates that they've designed? The Healthcare Leadership Council, which is the body of people who set the plans for the hospitals, for private practices. They kind of set the standard and certify what should be done and what shouldn't be done. So they're the leaders, they're the ones that everybody looks to, have something called the Opiate Roadmap for Action. And one of the things is that most prescriptions that were given out for opiates were in 30 or 90 day packages, you know, was what the scripts were written for. And they have said that needs to be changed to a 7-day prescription.
Mm.
And they said the reason is that opiates for pain is good for basically for 2 weeks. You know, so 2 weeks of acute pain, opiates can be used. And you should only write a script for only 7 days. Because after that, you no longer have a benefit from the opiates. Understanding how opiates work. Now, why do opiates work to decrease pain? It's because the body, if you get injured, your body makes natural opiates. So the reason opiates work is because it's a natural chemical that is produced by your body. When you take an opiate prescription, it will go to the receptor sites and overtake your own receptors and utilize that to produce pain relief. But it destroys the receptors and it decreases your own body's ability to make its own opiates.
Mm.
So let me repeat that again.
Mm-hmm.
It destroys the receptors and decreases your own body's natural ability to make opiates. And when, let's say you stubbed your toe and it would have produced maybe a 2 or a 3 on the pain level. After being on opiates for 8 weeks, 3 months, and you stubbed your toe, that would be a 9 or a 10.
It increased the pain.
Your pain sensitivity is shot.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, one of the things that I found when we were first dealing with the opiate crisis is that I would be able to, you know, they had an original back problem or a knee problem or some type of issue on that shoulder, and I was able to get that fixed. What was difficult was to get them over the pain of the that was created by the opiates.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So if I have no pain right now,
mm-hmm.
and if I was on opiates for 3 months, I would have pain. Just because my own natural body's ability to sensitivity to pain is decreased because of the use of the opiates in my system.
Because they destroy the natural...
They destroy the natural body's ability to handle pain.
Mm-hmm.
So pain, chronic pain, is not helped by opiates. It makes it worse.
Mm-hmm. So have the writing of prescriptions changed for opiates over time?
It's supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors have not done it. Now, again, we talked about the whole crisis here with doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors are being, an interesting thing is doctors are paid according to the satisfaction of the patient. So, you know, almost all doctors are working for hospitals, and the patient fills out a questionnaire, you know, on a regular type of basis, on rating their care with the doctors. And if you get a poor rating, you can get docked, you can get fired, you don't get raises, and people want to be fixed. You know, they want an answer. Mm-hmm. And right now, they know that Joe down the street got some opiates, and he's out. He's happy as a lark. Mm-hmm. And they say, "Why am I not getting a script?" And the people are people sit there and go. The doctors also have the whole problem of a shortened type of a visit. They need to get people through. In other words, there is a system that has been created that has got the doctors into a bind. And doctors have not reduced their prescription of the opiates. I'm still having people coming in, and they're getting 90-day prescriptions for opiates.
And it's supposed to go down to 7 days.
It should only be a 7-day prescription. And after that, they need to find something else. There is also the whole problem of, one patient was saying that, you know, he went in, had a really bad knee problem, and had an injury, and said, you know, doc, what do I do about my knee? And they wrote out a script for the opiates. And the guy sat there and goes, you just gave me a 90-day prescription for opiates.
No recommendation for therapy.
He said, yeah. What about, you know, what should I do something else? He said, oh, you give that a try for 90 days. If it doesn't work, then we'll sit there and look into something else.
So it hasn't changed.
It hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a quick way to get the patient out the door. And he sits there and he says, well, you know, I had a friend who went to, you know, our office. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, there's a chiropractor down there who combines. Oh, he said, you don't want to do that. That's dangerous. But he's handing him what's proven to be extremely dangerous, an opiate prescription for 90 days, mm-hmm. which guarantees he's probably going to be addicted at that point mm-hmm. and go through withdrawals. I know another patient who went through a 90-day prescription, and they said, I'm never doing that again. They said, you know, I don't care what I went through before. It wasn't as bad as getting off the opiates. Mm-hmm. He said, that was horrible. Mm-hmm. That was the worst thing that's ever happened to me, and really went down to the doctor's office and said, you should never have given me 90-day prescription of opiates.
Well, people can tell their doctors not to give it to them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we're hearing that more.
And finding a place to refer them to that has good success rate mm-hmm. with dealing with pain in a much better way.
Well, and we talked last week about the treatment we provide at the Prather practice. That's why we're calling it a new hope for opiate free pain relief. And we talked about that where it came from the higher up and from research, right?
Right.
Treatments.
Again, the Healthcare Leadership Council, which is the biggest decision-making group, and these aren't chiropractors mm-hmm. or acupuncturists, these are research medical doctors who teach at the universities, said that cognitive behavioral intervention, physical therapy, occupational therapy, physical medicine, biofeedback, chiropractic, mm-hmm. and acupuncture is the recommended first line of treatment for pain relief. Mm-hmm. And instead of writing a script for opiates, they need to write a script to go to a clinic that provides chiropractic, acupuncture, physical medicine, biofeedback, occupational therapy, physical therapy, mm-hmm. And do that, write that prescription. But there is a underlying false information that has been put out, mm-hmm. Funded by the pharmaceutical companies, disparaging those types of care.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we overcome that? Again, it has to be education. Education. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of medical doctors as patients into my office. who really appreciate our care. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the younger generation, you know, the exposure, the teaching in the medical schools needs to be not disparaging those types of care, saying that structure function care is an integral part of our healthcare system. And we even go so far that structure function care should be the primary care physician. Mm-hmm. The specialists who are the disease care medical doctors are the ones who should be dealing with pharmaceuticals. And for the most part, you know, in our clinic, one, we don't write any prescriptions for opiates. We do not feel qualified to be doing that. That needs to be someone who is a specialist, and that most pharmaceuticals should be written by specialists, not by general practitioners. Mm. And general practice physicians should be structure function based.
Makes sense.
As a matter of fact, up in Chicago, there was a study on 60,000 patients in an HMO, Blue Cross Blue Shield. And what they did was they took chiropractors as primary care physicians, along with nurse practitioners, just how our practice is set up. And they did a study for 10 years and found that there was a 60% saving on cost. There was an 85% less adverse conditions that had occurred. So there was an 85% improvement in the health of the patients. Mm. Because the primary care physicians were doing structure function care instead of doing prescription care. And then the specialists, the oncologists, cardiologists, gastroenterologists, pain specialists who they would refer to, would be the ones who would provide the disease care. Interestingly enough, the specialists rated the two different systems because they had it evenly divided, 30,000 people in one group, 30,000 people in another. And the specialists gave the chiropractic physicians as primary care, the structure function care, a 98% rating.
98%.
And they gave the medical physicians, the pharmaceutically based, a 40% rating. Hmm. And the people who were doing it were shocked by that. And they said, you know, what are you guys doing? They said, oh, we spend 85% of our time on the other 30% and only 15% of our time on the structure function care, because we get so much better results with the structure function care on the health of the patient. That's the way that all healthcare should go. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're really promoting, is that 80% should be primary care, structure function based, and 20% should be the specialists, the medical specialists who do the pharmaceuticals, who provide that type of a care, because they know what they're doing. And they have a better understanding and can really facilitate the health and well-being of the patient.
And I think if we do that, we wouldn't have a healthcare crisis.
There would not be a healthcare crisis. We'd have reduced our costs by 60%. Mm-hmm. We'd have 85% improvement, and we would be the number one health, providing the best health care in America. And it would increase the economy. It would increase the family situation. It would lower the amount of people in prisons. It's great.
When we come back, more on opiate-free pain relief, a new hope.
Never miss an episode of The Voice of Health so that you can stay informed and empowered about your health. Get a podcast of our show automatically delivered to you every week by signing up for our show on iTunes. You can find that link on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. And don't forget, thevoiceofhealthradio.com has complete archives of all of our past episodes with an audio library of information to help you add more life to your years and more years to your life. This is The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. The Voice of Health Wellness Tip with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice.
Well, I'm joined today with Lisa Kelly, CEO of Lupus Foundation of America, Indiana Chapter, and Carla Day, Board Chair. Well, what events do you have coming up this fall?
Our largest fundraiser is actually coming up. It's September the 29th. It is our Walk for Lupus Now. It's being held at Military Park. The walk is a 1 or 3 mile walk on the canal. Registration, they could actually go to our website,
lupusindiana.org. Yeah, registration is free, so that's nice. And then they can start their own team and recruit friends and family to join. What's nice this year is it's also linked to Facebook, so you could share that donate link and raise money online, which makes it very easy.
So that's Saturday, September 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And when does it start?
Registration starts at 10. The walk starts at
10:30.
Thank you.
And then the walk is at noon. Last year we had 1,100 walkers. And of those, 200 had lupus. So we're expecting just as large a turnout this year.
Wow.
And we're very glad to have the Prather Practice as a sponsor this year.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about any other events coming up this fall.
So, yeah, we have our In the Loop Living with Lupus, Healthy Living with Lupus Symposium on October 27th. That's at the Crown Plaza Airport Hotel. And we have 8 incredible topics and 7 speakers, including Dr. Prather. And he will be speaking on understanding the natural process of lupus and also alternative methods for maximum health, which will include acupuncture and essential oils and chiropractic care. Then another one we're really excited about is CBD oil for pain management. That'll be one of the topics this year, as well as depression, stress, and anxiety management. So all of these topics are again available on our website, lupusindiana.org, and registration is only $20 for lupus patients, but we do have scholarships available for those who have the need.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, ladies. Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Lisa. Again, that event is this Saturday, September 29th at 12 p.m. at Military Park.
Are you frustrated by not getting to the root cause of your health issue? Are you tired of not knowing why you're always fatigued? Are you wanting to say no to toxic drugs? Have you lost hope? Are you just tired of being sick and tired? At the Prather Practice, we want you to know that we have the answers for you. We offer the alternative to the disease care model. We are the drug-free model to health and wellness. At the Prather Practice, we look for the underlying cause of your health problem and not just the symptomatology. Through thorough diagnostics, we find your individual health blueprint for your treatment. Where the disease care model is symptom-based, the structure-function model we practice gets to the root of your health issue. The Prather Practice is the most comprehensive wellness center in the Midwest. Our integrated practice offers you the most treatment options to restore your health and your hope. Learn more about the Prather Practice by calling 317-848-8048 or learn more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, where our mission is restoring hope to our patients. This is part 2 of a 2-part series called Opiate-Free Pain Relief, A New Hope. And Dr. Prather, when do you know you're addicted and need help?
The big thing that people say is that it's when you need the opiates just to feel normal. It's no longer for pain relief, but just the ability to feel normal. The other thing is, if you've been on, unless it's an end-of-life type of thing, you know, and then opiates are great. You know, if somebody's in a situation where, you know, they're not going to be living much longer, gradually increasing the opiates, providing pain relief is certainly a very legitimate way of using it. But really, you should never take opiates longer than 2 weeks. So, you know, just use that as a...
Can you get addicted within those 2 weeks?
Usually not. There are cases where that can happen. But, you know, the longer you go, the harder it is to... the more withdrawal you have. So, you know, really any... you should never be taking opiates for an acute situation longer than 2 weeks. After that, you and even then, the less you can take... the better off you are.
Yeah, and then where does heroin come in? you know.
Now, one of the biggest things about heroin is people, like I said, 80% of everyone who started with heroin, who is a heroin addict, started with prescription pharmaceuticals.
80%.
80%. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, we had talked about that great-grandma, 80-year-old?
Last week we talked about,
she was doing heroin. Because she could no longer get...
Her doctor cut her off.
Mm-hmm. And she started to go through withdrawals. And with no support. And it was a situation of, what do you do? Mm-hmm. So...
Heroin's cheaper.
Mm. And, you know, how do we make a teetotaling 80-year-old great grandma who is a pastor's wife into a heroin addict? Mm-hmm. You know, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating, and it should make people angry.
Right.
You know, it's a whole tsunami that was based off of greed. The pharmaceutical companies that were making $6 billion a year. You know, that's not. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
So someone listening out there that might know, have a friend or a family member they're concerned about, you know, that are on opiates and wondering if they're addicted, what can they do for them?
You need to call for help. This is not something it's just, you can't go up to someone and say, hey, buck up and get off of it.
Right.
You know, this is a medical condition and should be treated medically. There are many different types of services out there that meet the requirements. There are the vast majority of the places that treat opiate addiction do it through other pharmaceuticals. There are a few out there who don't, if you don't want to. One of the things that they can do is, of course, call our practice, and we can help them through this crisis. Mm-hmm. We can provide resources, places to go. We do have places that we refer people that are opiate addicted. And then also we help them with the pain and get through quite a bit of the withdrawal. Through some of the practices that we do nutritionally. As a matter of fact, we get referrals from clinics that are into counseling for opiates addiction, and so we get referrals on that, and we get some really great results. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they can call our office, they can search around, but you need to get professionals that you feel comfortable with. If they don't feel comfortable with us, then they need to get somebody who can help them through this process.
You know, and I think, too, and I shared in our part one on this opiate-free pain relief last week about my brother, who is a recovering cocaine addict, and realizing that we had enabled him as a family for years, and it was so important to stop the enabling, you know, to kind of look at ourselves as family members, as husbands, wives, parents. You know, are we enabling? You know, are we aware or concerned, but just, you know, putting it under the, kind of sweeping it under the rug.
Maintaining instead of confronting the situation. And what you did with him was an intervention.
Yeah, it was an intervention, yeah.
That got him turned around. And you had a professional there who knew what they were doing.
Right, and took him right from that intervention into inpatient rehab.
Right.
And he has been clean now for 10 years and changing laws in Michigan and making changes and... You know.
Very proud of him.
Very encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Prather, as always.
Thank you, Lisa.
Very informative, and there is hope out there.
There is hope. There is hope.
Thank you.
The Prather Practice is located at 8902 North Meridian Street on the north side of Indianapolis, just south of the I-465 loop. If we can help you to achieve better health, we'd love to hear from you. Connect with our office at 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Join us again here next week or anytime on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com for The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather.